Welcome to Recovery Stories, Yukon and BC. This podcast aims to create a space for healing, understanding, and connection.
Today on the podcast, my first family member joins us to share, hopefully not the last. Charmaine is here. She's my second cousin. She lives in BC. She is 60 years old, and she has been sober for 33 years. Welcome, Charmaine.
Thank you, Capri. And thanks for inviting me to share my experience, strength, and hope today. I'm here visiting family, and I'm grateful to be a guest on the traditional territory of the Trondek Huechin people. I'm Squamish First Nation, and my mother is Stolo from Suwali First Nation. I grew up around a lot of alcoholic behaviors, which included violence and other forms of dysfunction. My late father attended an Indian residential school, as did my mom. And like many residential school survivors, the impact of that experience was devastating for them and their ability to thrive as Indigenous people or parents. But that is not all that defines them or me. My parents eventually quit drinking and recovered in their own ways. I began my recovery in Alcoholics Anonymous. I know my parents wanted better for me, and I wanted better for my sons, and now my son is an amazing father to my granddaughter Scarlett. My first drinks were little glasses of baby duck at holiday dinners, starting around 10 years old. I remember feeling so grown up and fancy. When I was 12, I offered to do the Thanksgiving dishes, a suspicious move for a 12-year-old. But the truth was, you couldn't see into the kitchen, and instead of doing the dishes, I finished the wine and got drunk. My mom had to take me home in a taxi. The next morning, she gave me a Pepsi and a cream soda. That was her hangover cure that I always had to go to the store to get. I didn't get in trouble. They thought it was funny. My mom went out to bars quite often, and I was home alone a lot. I knew the bar phone numbers by heart. Back then, you could call and have people paged. I never liked it when my mom drank, so I would call and page her and ask her to come home. She usually didn't, but that didn't stop me from trying. My stepdad was a bouncer, so they would come home after the bars closed and fight. I could hear everything and would lie frozen in my room until it got quiet, then I would go out there to make sure they were okay. Also back then, it wasn't uncommon to leave kids in the car while parents went into the bar. Most times when we traveled, my late sister and I would be stuck waiting in the car for hours while my mom and stepdad had their infamous few beers. Sometimes they would have friends over to drink. One night, my cousin Bugsy stole some beer from the fridge. I was too scared to do it, but the adults were too drunk to notice. We drank them as fast as we could. Nothing major happened, but I remember loving how I felt. I felt free of fear. Growing up as the youngest in an abusive and neglectful home, I was scared a lot. As a teen, I drank as often as I could with my limited resources. It was problematic, and as early as 16 years old, I started taking breaks because I was just ashamed of my actions. I would black out and not remember what happened, so I'd stop for a few months. Each time I started again, I told myself I'd do better this time, and that never happened. In 1987, I got married to a U.S. Navy man. I was 22 and moved to San Diego. We had two sons. As a child, I always said I would never drink and act like my parents did. I tried hard to control my drinking, and I managed barely. This kind of made me a binge drinker. Once I started, well, you know what happens. One is too many, and a thousand is never enough. I truly wanted to be a good mother. I love my sons so much. When my first husband and I split up, I fell apart. My lack of finances were the only thing that limited my drinking, but I always seemed to find a way. Me and my friends would go to the club, have no money or way home, and manage to get trashed. My friend and I say we would like to thank the military for financing a good portion of our alcoholism for that period of our lives. But my alcoholism progressed and my life spiraled. One day I looked around at my crappy apartment, the other alcoholics and addicts that were there, my so-called friends, and my two little darling babies. I had that moment of clarity and realized what my life had become. I told my best friend at the time that I wanted to quit drinking. She said she did too, and we tried and failed often. On my 28th birthday, we were avoiding everyone so we wouldn't drink. She asked if I wanted to go to an AA meeting. It sounded like a good idea, so we got all dressed up like we were going to a club, and we walked down to the El Cajon Olano Club. There was a men's meeting going on, and we thought that was perfect. But they didn't agree, and they suggested we go down to a different meeting that was open to everyone. We went to Farragut Circle. It was a large meeting that bussed in military men that were in treatment. We thought that was a bonus. We sat in the back with our makeup perfect, big hair and short skirts, trying to be inconspicuous. Of course they called on us and we pointed at each other. I didn't know you could just pass, so I went up to the podium and for the first time I said, "I'm Charmaine and I'm an alcoholic." I humbly shared that life wasn't great and I think drinking is my problem. I don't really remember what else I said that day, but I saw other women crying with me. When I listened to others share, I felt like they were talking about my life. And I felt hope for the first time. At the end of the meeting, they surrounded us with love, phone numbers, and a welcoming AA spirit. It took me a few more months to get sober, even though I went to meetings, got a sponsor, read the big book, went to all the sober dances, roundups, and campouts. I didn't understand why I wasn't getting it. My last drunk wasn't my worst drunk, not even in the top 10. But in the morning, I had that morally bankrupt feeling that I'd heard about, that hole in the soul. I knew there was a way, but I wasn't getting it. I started to cry and silently pray. Then from the most pitiful place, I said out loud, "Creator, please help me." And in that dark moment, the lights came on. I knew I didn't have the strength within myself, but I got the concept that a power greater than me would help. Other than a few slippery situations, I haven't had the obsession to drink since then. At the time, I was a single mom on welfare living in California with no support system other than AA. I learned much more than just how to stay sober in AA. I learned how to live life and be a responsible, productive member of society. I learned how to be a trusted friend and to help other women on their sobriety path. I went back to school, got my GED, and then became a medical assistant. One of my coworkers was also going to school to become a drug and alcohol counselor. She got a job at a treatment center called Crash. She called me and told me I should work there. At this time, I was working as an office manager for Indian Health Services in San Diego, but the place was having a lot of issues with changing directors and staff. I left there and started volunteering at Crash. This job was meant for me, and within 2 months, they hired me. I learned so much and went on to get my addictions counseling certificate. I truly love working with alcoholics and addicts. And I eventually got married again. It was good until it wasn't, and I leaned into recovery and supporting other women in recovery to stop wallowing in my self-pity when that marriage ended. I was sober. I had a strong, sober circle of support. I was a productive member of society, and for the first time, I was financially responsible for myself and my kids. I was grateful, and I even tried marriage for a third time. But I guess it's just not for me. Seldom do I feel alone, though. Most times I know I'm blessed. In 2013, I lost my sister to alcoholism. She was in and out of the hospital for her last few years. I tried to help. I brought her to meetings, helped her get into treatment and other healing activities. It would frustrate me because I had supported so many people in the recovery over the years, but I was unable to save her. She had the desire to stop, but couldn't stay sober. I eventually made the decision to stop trying to save her, just be a sister, and love her where she was at. Although I miss her, I don't regret doing that. When she left, we had lots of love and peace between us. I know she has wounds that she couldn't heal, and she is at peace now. My father passed away in 2002 and left us his home on Capilano Reserve. I came back home in 2003 and continued working as an addictions counselor in my community. I always wanted to be part of healing with our people. It was as much a blessing to me. The gift of coming home has been reconnecting with my community and our culture. I feel her songs into my soul. I'm a junior elder now, and a good time is sitting with other women, laughing, beading, or weaving. It feels natural. It feels like home. It was the women in recovery that saved me. Honestly, I cherish the moments and experiences that I've had. Shortly after my second divorce, I was sponsoring quite a few women, but there were two that were my barnacles. They helped me as much as I them. We were absolutely not a glum lot. They did their steps at the same time, and we went to Sunset Cliffs, a beautiful cliffside beach in San Diego, and did the third step prayer together. As we were saying the third step prayer together, we could hear the waves build up and crash in. We were in awe and absolutely felt the Creator's presence with goosebumps and happy tears. As if that wasn't enough, someone suggested we go skinny dipping to commemorate this day. To this day, nobody owns up to whose idea it was, but it wasn't mine. Anyway, we found what we thought was a nice private place, took all our clothes off, and went in the water. The bottom was quite slimy, and one wouldn't come in the water. The two of us in the water saw a couple walking up behind her, and we were laughing so hard we couldn't get the words out to tell her that there were people behind her. When she finally saw them, she got over her fear of the slime fast and came in. As we drove away from that beach, we realized that you could see a lot from that busy street. So my point is, recovery can be what you make it. The choice is yours. I'm humbled and proud to say that I've been sober for 33 years. Over the years, I've received many cakes and some accolades. I'm proud to say that in 2017, we started the Naloxone campaign called Knock for Naloxone in our community. We had signs made that people could place in their yard saying that if someone overdoses, you can knock on my door for a Naloxone kit in hopes of saving lives. We also initiated the Two-Spirit Pride activities in our community in 2018. Both are successful activities that are still going strong. But my proudest moment was when my son, who was 12 at the time, gave me a cake, and he said he was proud that I was his mom. That when he wants to help his friends, he thinks, "What would my mom say?" That has been my greatest gift of recovery. Thank you for listening and for your precious time, and I wish you all another 24.
Thank you, Charmaine. What self-care techniques keep you grounded and sober?
These days I've been doing a lot of crafts. I recently started making necklaces and bracelets with crystals and glass beads and also cedar beads and devil's club. I really enjoy making that.
What is one of your biggest challenges since becoming sober, and how did you get through that?
When I lost my sister, I was actually kind of angry and couldn't understand. Like, she tried. Why couldn't this happen for her? Why was she not granted this gift of recovery? I still have feelings about it today. I wish that things could have been a little better for her, I guess. How I got through that was just all the things that I learned in AA. Like, a drink was not going to make that any better for me. A drink will never improve any of my problems. Like, I'm so solid in that belief. And I think that's probably what saved me from those difficult times. Drinking is never going to make any of my problems better, ever.
Do you still sponsor people in AA?
Not so much anymore. When I became an addictions counselor, I really wanted to find some balance in my life because I went through a period of time before I left San Diego that I was sponsoring a lot of women, which I loved because it was a gift to me as well. Also was all that my life was about. So working as an addictions counselor, sponsoring a lot of women in AA, when I moved back home, I thought this is an opportunity for me to make some changes and have a little bit more balance. So,
being an addictions counselor must be so fulfilling in so many ways, but must really be hard to see people go back out that you're working with over and over again. How did you deal with those feelings of frustration and sadness?
Yes, that's very true. And when I first started, it was difficult. I took everything home with me. You know, I worried about everybody. When I was working at the treatment center, when they'd leave the treatment center, and, you know, what are they going to do now? I know their story, you know, and I know how challenging it's going to be for them. But I think over time, you learn to not carry it so much. And one of the things that I told myself, I think that made the most difference, was to say, you know what, Charmaine, that's their story. It's not for you to intrude and carry their story with you. It wasn't right for me, and it's almost like an intrusion. Pray for them. Keep the door open. Never leave in a place where they wouldn't feel comfortable coming back to say, can you help me again?
What is something that you wish everyone knew about addiction?
I wish people would understand that addicts and alcoholics do not choose to be addicts and alcoholics. It's not a choice anybody would make. I wish they would understand the compulsion that people have to drink and use. Most people that drink and use truly do want to stop. They just don't believe that they can. And the best help that anyone could be to them is trying to build upon the faith that you believe in them and that they can do it.
What are you most grateful for in your sobriety?
I'm most grateful that I changed the projection of my life, which impacted the projection of my son's lives. Their lives weren't perfect, and I was not perfect by any means. And I owned that, and I've owned that with them too, through the steps and making amends and whatnot. And they've kindly and lovingly forgiven me for the mistakes that I made. And I don't think that I would have had that without recovery. I don't think I would have been as supportive and loving. And people say, oh, you don't get sober for other people, you do it for yourself. Sometimes there are things that motivate you, and it's okay to hang on to that. I really, really wanted to be a good mom. It's so important to me. And when I looked into their eyes, and I just, for the first time in my life, really fully understood love, I wanted the world to be a better place. I wanted their world to be a better place. I can't change the whole world. My sons are my best friends, and that's a great gift. My granddaughter, she's still very attached to her parent, but I hope someday she'll be my best friend too.
Thank you so much for being here today, Charmaine, and sharing. I really appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening. If you or someone you know is struggling with addiction, please reach out to our website at storiesytbc.com for supports in your area. Or if you'd like to share your story on this podcast, please email storiesytbc@gmail.com.